It's Monday, January 29th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that off a wild weekend for all of us, but a particularly wild weekend for him, is Dalton Del Don. Dalton, what is going on, buddy?
Still recovering, Harmon. We're recording this Monday morning after my Niners somehow won that game. I still don't understand how they made that comeback, especially a team that was, you know, 0-30 entering the fourth quarter, down 5 points just a couple weeks ago. Just came back from the largest halftime deficit in conference championship history. So sick. It was brutal, man. At halftime, they were chanting Jared Goff in the bathroom, and Lions fans saying, "Don't hear any Niners fans now," and chanting Jared Goff. It was miserable. I mean, there was more Lions fans there than the week before the Packers. At times, Purdy couldn't even hear his cadence. So it was an impressive turnout for the Lions fans, and man, they deserved better. They kicked ass the first half, and wow, what a comeback. What can I say? It was wild, and like I said, I'm still recovering.
We're going to recap the games like we always do. We'll go through the winner, we'll go through the loser, you know, kind of post-mortem on the losers. You know, we'll look forward a little bit with the winners here, and kind of also in the full encapsulation of their season. But again, Dalton, you know, I do just this roller coaster of emotions for you. So you actually had a little bit of experience. You took us live into the experience with a few videos. Let's take a listen to those and talk about it on the other side. So again, Dalton, for the people, just give me like, again, not the game, but your emotional state. If we couldn't get it from there, just talk me through your specific emotions, being a 49er fan, being there on Sunday, like dive into the whole thing.
Yeah, I did my best with the video or videos because it's difficult. It's a lot of background noise there, let me tell you. Some rowdy fans, the tailgate started early, but yes, halftime, it was devastating. Honestly, 31-7, my wife's like, "We're out of here." I'm like, I just had YouTube clips coming up to me when the Niners came back from 24 points down against the Giants in the playoffs in that crazy game where Owens caught and they had to get two-point conversion everyone, but that would have been pretty brutal, down 24. I was surprised that Campbell didn't go for the throat at the end of halftime. Going for the touchdown there, but I understand that part of the reason going for it when you're in close is you get the advantage of field position if you don't get it, and that wouldn't have mattered there at the end of half. But a lot of decisions, in-game decisions, we can talk about later with Campbell. But yeah, it was the emotions were out of control, and to have it end, we decided to stay there and watch the ceremony, Harmon, and that decision cost about 2 hours of traffic at least, because I know another buddy that left after the onside kick was recovered, and he was at home and in bed a couple hours before we got home, and even stopped it in and out, which we did not. So it was still cool to watch the celebration and the confetti. The last NFC Championship game, my wife and I drove all the way to the Rams to LA and watched the Niners lose that one. So this was a little better. We'll talk about the Super Bowl at some point. It's a tough task ahead, but man, the Niners just faded down the stretch. That was really not the same team we had watched all year, these last couple games. I mean, the Packers and Lions totally deserve credit, but man, the Niners are kind of on their heels right now. They're not playing even close to their best football, but somehow they made that comeback, and a lot of luck was involved. I'm not gonna hide from that. I mean, that IU play and some, you know, other drops, Reynolds, but a wild game. 34-31, 65 points scored total, championship game, a big comeback. The weather was perfect. What a fun game. I can't wait to rewatch it. Ideally, I would rewatch it before we record this, but I haven't had the time. But man, how was it watching from the TV version, man? Was it as intense as it was live?
Oh, it was crazy. And just getting into the whole game here, it was insane to watch it, even just being at home. And like, honestly, I felt, you know, with number one, just the actual size of the deficit. And we've all seen the dumb stats about like Kyle Shanahan is, you know, 0 and whatever when he's behind by double digits in the fourth quarter, all that stuff. Like, we all know that's a stupid stat because every coach has a bad record in those situations. But we've heard those stats with him. And you know, all of the questions about Purdy and everything, like in the back of my mind, I'm like, this game's over. Like the Lions are going to win this game, and what an incredible thing. And just for that, for things to happen in that way, for a team to come back from a historic deficit, number one, you've got to have so many things going wrong in the first half, things that like sort of got fixed in the second half, but also just didn't. You mentioned these lucky breaks, and like, by the way, that's sports. Like, I don't know why we run from the idea that, oh yeah, you know, you got to get lucky a little bit sometimes in sports, like especially in a single elimination playoff tournament like this, you've got to have some breaks. You got to have some bounces of the ball. And the 49ers certainly had some in the second half, and not even to get into the fourth down decision-making stuff. Like I saw Ben Solak point this out on Twitter that expected points lost by Detroit, Gibbs fumble, -5.5, the Ayuk reception off the face mask, -3.3, Josh Reynolds fourth down drop, -3.2, incomplete to St. Brown on fourth and three, -2.6. Like, yeah, you got to have things go your way. They went the way of the 49ers, but obviously, again, a lot had to go wrong to get to that position in the first half. I definitely remember in my biggest feeling I can think of early in the game, watching it and seeing the Lions just establish the hell out of the run. I mean, for you watching the game as a fan, that has to be so demoralizing because you knew this was going to be an issue. And we talked about the ways that it would be an issue, like schematically, for Detroit versus San Francisco. And that's exactly how it played out to start the game.
Yeah, Niners missed a field goal, and that Purdy hit, correct me if I'm wrong, but that could have been a personal foul at the end instead of a field goal. That drive, it looked like, I think he was bloodied up, right? So wasn't 100% all lines, but yeah, definitely breaks on the SF side. The one thing I'd mentioned on the way over on the car ride is I hope the Niners shored up the defense against the toss. I mean, Bosa talked about it after Aaron Jones, the Packers averaged 9 yards per carry against it the week before. Yes, one came on that long 50-yard run, but they were clearly vulnerable. And then the opening drive, they opened up with multiple tosses and just and get gashed. And it was interesting, a couple of the Campbell decisions in short yardage. He doesn't run when you think he is, and then he passes then he runs when you don't, when he does. The timeouts are so crucial at the end. But they were getting dominated against the ground, the Niners, and secretly they were, you look at the EPA numbers, they kind of like the Cowboys, not really as good against the run as their overall numbers suggested because of game script. You know, teams had the third most pass attempts against the Niners this year. They're often not able to run the ball like they wanted. But even missing Jonah Jackson, that Detroit offensive line was impressive, and Montgomery was awesome. Gibbs was impressive. So yeah, that was demoralizing. And when you have a big deficit against a team running the ball like that, it wasn't they were ahead a lot because of a fluke here, you know, fumble lost here. They were getting, you know, beat up, and it looked like the Lions might be able to control the game clock in that second half down, you know, 17 points. So not only did they come back, but it was crazy. They erased that 17-point deficit in like the first, what, 7-8 minutes of the second half.
Yeah. What do you make of the struggles on defense for San Francisco? Because obviously this is going to be a big talking point as we go into the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks here. Is it a schematic issue? Is it an issue up front? Like what is at the heart of San Francisco's one just struggles generally to stop the run? I mean, that has become a massive issue, and it was always going to stand out against Detroit, like we said, but overall, this has just not been the same. Like I thought it was kind of crazy people coming into this weekend, like, yeah, the 49ers defense just as good as the Ravens. Like, and I know the Ravens lost, we'll talk about it, but not even close. Like schematically, metrics wise, like it's just not, it hasn't been that type of defense for quite some time now.
No, the Chiefs defense is unquestionably playing better football. I don't know the answer to those questions, specifically run defense. I mean, their defensive line has been addressed and healthy. I mean, I think Chase Young is, the Niner fans are very disappointed in his play recently. Pissed. Bosa got home a couple sacks. You know, he had been sackless in like four straight playoff games, but you knew the pressures would eventually get there. But yeah, the run defense is a suspect right now, and they're going to have 2 weeks to address that. But yeah, I don't know the reason behind it. I know Wilkes has gone from coaching candidate to will he be fired, you know, if they had lost this game. So it is his first year in the system. But ever since week 11, they lost Hufanga, the safety.
Yeah.
But it also coincides with a much tougher schedule. I think Aaron Schatz pointed that out in DVOA. If you strip week 18 when they saddle their starters and you look at the schedule, it's not the one player missing has been all the difference. So yeah, they're certainly not playing their best football entering the most important game of the season. That's for sure.
But they are pulling it out at the end. Like results wise, that's what matters. You know, if they win the Super Bowl in 2 weeks, nobody's going to remember like, oh yeah, but they weren't playing their best football in January, late December, whatever. Like we'll just remember that they won the Super Bowl. I do think obviously when we're previewing that game, when we're talking about that game, that's going to be a big talking point. But you know, regardless, like I think there's, I don't know, there's, in like we talked about in the playoffs, there's an element of luck to it. There's also an element of like just getting the job done. And Purdy has certainly not been perfect. There's been issues, but I'm curious what you thought of his performance yesterday, because I think it's going a little underrated. Like, obviously, yeah, he had, yeah, I thought Rich Rebar, I'll bring up another smart person here. Rich Rebar, Lord Reeves on Twitter, had a great point about this, quote tweeting the sideline toe tap completion to Kyle Juszczyk late in the second half. Like, that was a great throw, but as Rich points out here, yes, Purdy did complete a pass off the face of a defender that should have been an interception, but he also made several off-script plays that were great plays. Two completions to Juszczyk, including this one on the sideline toe-tap catch that I was just talking about, one to Jennings on third down, and scrambles of 21, 21, and 10 yards. I mean, I did not have 5 for 48 on the ground for Brock Purdy on my bingo card, but when we're talking about why he is better than Jimmy Garoppolo, why he has elevated, what he's, of course, we all know, like, it's not an insightful thing to say he's elevated by the situation and he has great supporting cast around him. We all know that. That's all accepted. But I think when we're talking about what makes him stand out and what makes him a great player in this environment and a better player than some of the other guys we've seen, like, those scrambles are a great way to say it. I mean, he is very good off script, and he's willing to throw off platform. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo could never and would never make any of those plays. I think it's a big reason why. And look, they went to a Super Bowl with Jimmy. They're going to Super Bowl with Brock Purdy. He obviously has to win the thing, I think, to cement this gap for many people. But for me, like, watching those plays, like, they're coming back. They're easing these deficits partly because of his playmaking ability off script.
Well, the Niners 1,000% lose this game if Garoppolo is the starting quarterback.
Right.
On one hand, though, this is a crazy stat. The Lions entered this game as the first team in NFL history to allow 300 yards passing and multiple touchdowns in 5 straight games. That's the stat, supposedly. I don't know if that is true. Double check if you want. But suppose it's the first time in NFL history, not just playoffs or anything, that a team's allowed 5 straight games, 300 yards passing, and multiple TDs. So it was a good setup for Purdy here. And he did not come through with some massive fantasy line. That said, 8.6 YPA again, and he just made the... I don't think it's crazy to say the difference in this game was his legs. I mean, a couple of those rushes were just massive, so huge, and then timely. And then the other play to Jennings, third and Jennings, it was his only catch of the game, and he's calling it the greatest catch of his life. But that's such improvisation to even get the ball there by Purdy. So yeah, the same short shuttle speed as Lamar Jackson, right? It showed this game. It was impressive, and he didn't slide once either. He's going forward. Yeah. I mean, taking the hits, bloodied up. But yeah, man, we love BCB. But once again, some shaky moments. The pick could have been another pick. So yeah, he is blessed when it comes to these defenders somehow not catching his passes as much as his receivers. Our guy Ayuk, I will say, dropped a key third down that ended a drive before. Mm-hmm. That was a great pass by Purdy, at least from the stadium, and the replay I saw looked like Ayuk should have caught it, but of course he more than made up for it when that highlight reel pass. Oh, did he score or not? The guy did touch him, because I was kind of upset Shanahan didn't challenge that.
But I thought he did. My first instinct was that he had scored and that he didn't get touched. But I don't know, looking back on it, maybe I think he probably should have. It was worth a challenge, I'll put
yes,
it that
exactly.
way.
Yes, exactly, Shanahan. He doesn't challenge the fourth down play for Devonta Smith last year that resulted in a touchdown instead of getting the ball at midfield. So why in the world would
he
challenge there?
He's got a weird relationship with those timeouts, man. Yeah. I mean, even at the end of the game, it was like, it was two timeouts for the Niners and three for the Lions. Like, well, that was the biggest, for sure that was going to happen. If one coach was going to have two timeouts and the other was going to have three, it was definitely going to be Campbell to Shanahan there.
Yeah, that was burned weirdly. And then I'm very curious what, if justice wasn't served and Ayuk didn't catch that touchdown to end that same drive on third and goal, curious what Shanahan would have done there on fourth and goal. Down with double digits, but he would have had a decision there and he probably would have kicked the short field goal. But yeah, where were we? So excited about all this.
No, I mean, look, it was awesome. The IU catch is one of the most, one of the craziest bad breaks for the Lions,
yeah,
and just
really
unbelievable
was.
Breaks for the 49ers. But again, like, this is how it happens, okay? You can go to the Super Bowl being like a quote flawed team. I think neither one of these teams, Kansas City or San Francisco, is a perfectly smooth operation. And really, that's going to come into play when we talk about Baltimore later on, that there's no guarantees with these things. Like, you can go to a Super Bowl, you can win a Super Bowl being a deeply flawed team, but it doesn't really matter. Like, as long as you win, and I don't know if I just don't know if there's something to, I definitely think there's something brewing in Kansas City. We're just like, yeah, you know what? Things aren't going well. Like, at the end, we know we can pull this out. I feel like San Francisco is sort of kind of starting to get that belief in itself as well. And I think a lot of that stems from confidence in just the overall players in this ecosystem. And man, I mean, you could just go down the list talking about huge plays from McCaffrey, huge plays from Debo, the third and Jennings, like you said, obviously IU coming in clutch there with the conversion, the touchdown, and just the insane play to catch it off the face mask. Like, these guys are popping up at critical moments. But then Juszczyk, like we said, he's had some incredible moments here. They're just such a well-built operation on offense that they have definitely been messing with the margin for error, but they have a huge margin for error because of the guys they have there.
Yeah, that juice catch on the sideline was nice, and more Purdy improvisation where he just, I think that's when we looked like he was surely going to get sacked. So yeah, Purdy had his moments just like last week, and his down moments, and certainly his reasons why they won the game was just his plays. I mean, it was outside of Shanahan's system for a few of them. But yeah, he's definitely shaky at times, and it's like, there's no excuse for rain this week, you know, early on there. So, but yeah, without question, the Niners lose that football game by double digits if that's Garoppolo at the quarterback. He ain't coming back from in that situation. Debo, by the way, forced 8 missed tackles on 11 touches per PFF. Is that good? Playing with the banged up shoulder.
What a crazy player.
Yeah, insane.
What an insane player Debo Samuel is. All right, let's talk about the Lions. We'll have plenty of time to talk about the 49ers here over the next couple of weeks. This stings. This sucks. I could use this quote twice in my recap article, kind of just breaking down the losers. But Robert Mays shared a thought from Philip Rivers. He said, I remember Philip Rivers telling me about Norv Turner's speech after the AFC Championship game lost to the Patriots in 08. Said they were such a good team that they'd definitely be back. Rivers was 26. Their defensive stars were young. It never happened. That was in response to Dan Campbell, actually in a huge moment of honesty, again, said he was, this is from Justin Rogers. Dan Campbell said he was honest with the locker room that this might've been their only shot. He doesn't believe that. He doesn't think that, but it's the reality of the NFL. Said it will be twice as difficult next year. And I mean, he's right. And you can say this, and I was saying this, the same thing about the Ravens. We'll talk about it later when we get to that game. It's easy to say, like, oh, yeah, the Lions, especially the Lions, because they're so young. Brad Holmes has pitched almost nothing but gas in the draft, especially. Great free agency signings. This is one of the best, it has to be one of the best rebuilds of all time in the NFL. This should be just the beginning. This should be, like, the very start of their journey with the Lions. And, like, if I had to bet on it, I think they can certainly be back, but you just never know. And that's what makes it sting, especially in the fashion that they lost this in.
And that is especially true when we're talking in the NFL, when we're talking about a team without a star quarterback. It's tough to go back. I mean, that's, you know, Mahomes can hide off seasons, warts here right. Or there, you know, but I mean, Goff is great. I mean, it's perfectly average, maybe better than average, maybe top 10 now.
Better than average, maybe top 12. I'm not going to go as far as top 10, but definitely better
12-ish,
than average.
12-ish around there. But, yeah. You know, again, you get them out. I think the Lions have had a losing record on grass this season. So, I mean, they still are. That's, yeah, I remember that stat at halftime when they were getting blown out, my Niners. But it's tough to get there. It really is. And it's tough to win one. I mean, Niners are always even knocking at the door. But never getting through there. And the Lions have a good infrastructure, great line, young stars, Hutchinson on both sides of the ball, Branch. Gibbs is a star. What if Williams develops? Williams, right. Where did that come from? Two touchdowns and even a catch on fourth down that he drops that ball typically all year long. MVS and Williams, funny that those guys coming up with crucial, well, not so much crucial for Detroit, but catches in the playoffs there. But yeah, I like Campbell as a coach, both his decision-making on the field and preparation and just who he is. And it's great to see that, you know, that total sincerity out of him, because there is truth behind it and it does suck. And yeah, especially hits home, you know, when you had a 17-point lead in two quarters away from the Super Bowl. And yeah, they fought hard. They had a great year. The season started with a win in Arrowhead on Thursday night. No road team ever wins that game against the defending champs. And they did not get through by any flukiness. And frankly, they deserved better. And the Lions definitely have a bright future. But at the same time, it's tough to get this far in the NFL.
Yeah, and like we can basically shoot all this fourth down discourse into the sun. I don't want to sit here. I don't know if you want to sit here and break it down for 10 minutes, but I certainly do not. Like, you have a shaky kicker. You're there. You're in that game because of Dan Campbell's aggressiveness. And like, you want him to suddenly change stripes now? I don't think so. Like, we can second guess and do every like, well, yeah, but this, that, is that. Like, well, if he kicks those field goals, the entire game plays out differently. So you just never know. You can't write anything in pen that way. So I'm not gonna hate on the man for being who he's been all season long.
Only thing I'll add on the fourth down decisions in his defense, even is it's not like it was crazy windy in Levi Stadium. For whatever it's worth, that the side and one of the decisions he made, the kicking was tougher. It seemed tougher. We're looking at the kickoffs. It was like a 10-yard difference on the kickoffs. And as you said, he's shaky in his career, whatever from that range is nothing special at all, below average, I think. And also Reynolds dropped the fourth down catch. Don't just look at results, man. I know people laugh at the process over results, but you're going to make fun of, criticize a coach for calling a play where he put his player in position to make an easy play. As a Niner fan, almost every decision Campbell made, I was like upset with. I would like, you know what I mean? So that to me was that he was making the smart moves, except the kick at the end of half. Frankly, I was pumped when he brought the field goal unit out. I was like, that would go for the throats with the touchdown there. I know on the other side to give the Niners momentum, but that was the only one that I was like, I'm glad that Campbell's decision. All the other going for fourth down, as a Niners fan, life or death, I would have absolutely preferred him make the opposite decision.
Yeah, Lions were 10 of 20, 75% at converting fourth and three or fewer in the regular season, and they'd been 2 of 2 in the postseason so far. Michael Badgley was 9 of 20, 45% in his career from 48-plus yards. So again, it's not as if they had like Justin Tucker on the other side of this thing, okay? Like, the field goal is not guaranteed. Look no further than your 49ers. I mean, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they take the Jake Moody. It's a perfect encapsulation of it. So again, I don't want to sit here and do a bunch of fourth down nonsense, but I do want to talk about Detroit going into next year, because like by the time this podcast is up, probably by the end of the week, I think Ben Johnson is going to be the head coach of the Washington Commanders. I think that's been the worst kept secret in the NFL for the last few weeks, that he's probably ticketed for that job. At least that's everything I've been hearing. I don't know. Maybe that's not what ends up happening. Maybe they interview Mike McDonald after the Ravens loss and they love that guy and they go with him. I think it's probably going to be one of those two players. And again, everything I've been hearing is that it's Ben Johnson. It's been Ben Johnson for a long time. I would be stunned if Ben Johnson is back as the head coach as the offensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions in next season. Just would be completely stunned. And it's easy, I think, to look at the 49ers winning this game and be like, that's a great example of a team that has survived an intense brain drain, right? And this matters for us in fantasy, right? These offensive coordinators and stuff, because like, the 49ers offense has just been able to keep chugging along, despite the fact that their coaching staff gets plucked clean every single year, because it all flows down from Kyle Shanahan as the play caller in chief, the offensive designer, and everything that comes along with it. The Lions, it's not that way. I mean, Dan Campbell, I think, is a difference-making head coach and a great head coach. And like, he could coach my team tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. Love that guy. But he's not the offensive play caller, right? He's not the offensive designer. In fact, he had a couple moments as the play caller when they were moving away from Anthony Lynn before they landed on Ben Johnson, and it didn't go that well for Detroit. Like, that's not where his specialty is. He's been basically able to farm all that stuff off to Ben Johnson, which has been great for the team. So Dalton, I'm curious, like, what's your concern level if Detroit has to lose, if Detroit does lose Ben Johnson? And by the way, there's reports that he could take offensive line coach Hank Fraley with him. Fraley's been a stud as the offensive line coach here. That line in general has been great, because it strikes me a little bit similar, not to induce nightmares for Lions folks and those that want to draft these guys in fantasy next year, but it strikes me a little bit similar to the Eagles last year, right? Like, because we have a ready-made replacement in Brian Johnson, our quarterback coach. Fast forward 1 year later, Brian Johnson's been fired and Nick Sirianni's on the ropes. You know, they're hunting for a new offensive coordinator, and like, end of season numbers were fine for the Eagles, but we all know that wasn't a good offense, and it wasn't any different schematically. Like, all this stuff about, oh, the Eagles should motion more, they should get under center more, they should be a little less static with the person. You know what they were doing in 2022 when they went to the Super Bowl? All that stuff. It's just they had a guy in Shane Steichen who got it, who was one of the guys, like, who just had that at the tip, like, in the palm of his hands, at the tip of his fingers. He had the play calling juice. They lose that guy, and it doesn't all fall apart, but it's just not as good. I don't think the Lions are going to fall apart by any means, but I'm just curious, like, what's your level of concern? What should our level of concern be if Ben Johnson is calling plays for insert rookie quarterback here in Washington next year and not Jared Goff, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and all these guys in Detroit?
I think it should be high level of concern. I was going to bring up the same. The Eagles are just a stark example of something we just saw happen that was a dramatic effect. And we're talking about a play caller. I mean, that's the thing here. It's not just an offensive coordinator. It's the full-blown play caller. And Campbell, I think you're going to absolutely need someone to just take over Johnson's role. Jared Goff, under pressure against the 49ers, went 0-for-8 with 0 yards. All of his production was clean pocket. So he needs the conditions. And Johnson seems like an innovative play caller, and he's been that for years. And that's part of the reason a lot of people really like the Lions this year, is because Johnson could have left for head coach last year, and this offense was going to be legit with him coming back. He had unfinished business, and he just proved it even further. Missing Jonah Jackson, it didn't matter. Banged up Frank Ragnow didn't matter. So, yes, I think Johnson if he goes to Washington, draft our guy McLaurin, draft Brian Robinson, and Gibbs is going to go in the second round, even despite Montgomery taking over all the goal line roles. He's so good in fantasy drafts. But Amon-Ra is going to go high, and Laporta is going to go high. But their offense absolutely could take a hit with the loss of Ben Johnson. What are your thoughts? I mean, how significant do you say? High concern, I said. I said, yes, there's a level of concern.
I think there's just a level of risk, right? So if risk concerns you, then yeah, I guess it's a concern. But like, we have to do a lot of maybe when we're talking about the Lions next year. Like, maybe Dan Campbell elevates. I mean, they have a lot of good coaching candidates on this staff, right? Like, Mark Brunell, quarterback's coach, done a great job with Jared Goff. Tanner Engstrand, a name I've heard from Lions fans and certain folks like in league circles, you know, the passing game coordinator. He's a guy who's on the rise. JT Barrett, assistant quarterback's coach. Like, they have a pretty good pipeline here. Hank Fraley, like I said, probably going with Ben Johnson to wherever he goes next. So maybe it's not him, which, by the way, would be super valuable if you could just stick your offensive line coach, if you could just have that, because that's been such a difference making unit. I mean, how many times was Penei Sewell on the move once again in this game against the 49ers, like, sealing the edge? So again, there's maybe one of these guys steps up into Ben Johnson's role and it's fine, we keep on moving, but there's a level of risk to it. And like, I don't think you're probably on the same page with me here, that I don't think this Lions offense is about to fall apart, but it's pretty similar to like what we saw with the Eagles this past year, where I don't think the Lions run game is about to completely go to hell next season, but we wouldn't have said that about the Eagles, right? Like, after last season, and that run game was a mess all year long. It's not as if like AJ Brown was a fantasy bust. He was wide receiver 7, but at certain times of the year, you thought he was going to be the number 1 overall receiver. Devontae Smith wasn't terrible, but he was drafted in the second, third round, and he finished as receiver 20. Like, what if Amon-Ra St. Brown, who probably is like a first round pick in fantasy next year, what if he has just a really, really good season and he's wide receiver 7? You might take that as a small disappointment. What if Sam Laporta, like, he has 700 yards again, but he scores 4 touchdowns, 5 touchdowns instead of 10. Like, those are the margins for error that we're talking about that a great coach brings you. And I think that might be a little bit riskier with Detroit next season.
Yeah, put really well. And Laporta is going to be the number 1 fantasy tight end going off the board too, I would imagine. And maybe the Lions running backs remain productive, but maybe they both don't finish top 15 like this year. And right. Eckler has to shave his eyebrows. So yeah,
that's a great eyebrow.
That's a great way of putting it, though. It's just like, no, they're not gonna be a disaster, but maybe they just all collectively slightly disappoint their ADPs next year. I could see that 100% being the outcome here.
Yeah, and we are emphasizing maybe, because if Brian Johnson had just had it with the Eagles this past year, and he just doesn't have it, or he didn't have it at this point in his career. If he has it, like, we're not having this conversation about Philly. And if one of these guys like Brunell or Engstrand or you know, whatever on the coaching staff, Antoine Randall-El, I mean, God, he's coaching receivers. So many players that you like remember if you just go through this coaching staff. Maybe one of those guys has it, and they're able to keep what they got going in Detroit, and it's good stuff, but there's a risk to it. And there's a risk that, like, hey, Brad Holmes, who's a great GM, maybe it doesn't have a good draft this year. Like, great GMs don't just keep pitching heat every single year like Brad Holmes has been. So that's why this loss, I mean, I don't have to tell Lions fans that it stings and it sucks and it's awful, but that's why losses like this are painful, because it's easy to say, yeah, we'll be right back, no big deal. You just never know, man, and there's always risk to it.
Mark Brunell was my original cheat code at running back. He would run in the mid-90s at fantasy. Let's go. And I'd still hand score those when the USA Today would come out on Tuesdays. Mark Brunell was the man.
I have seen...
dating myself a little there.
I have seen a suspicious amount... Yeah, you are dating yourself, but I've seen a lot of... a very large amount of Mark Brunell games live, you know, living near the Washington football team stadium growing up. I've seen a lot of Mark Brunell play, not just on TV, but went to those games. And yeah, he did. He could move a little bit.
Yeah, he pulled off big upset too on the road, Buffalo or something, playoff games. Yeah, they had their moments that team. I don't even think I realized he was on that coaching tree.
All right, we're gonna jump into the AFC title game, put a bow on this whole weekend right after this quick break. And we're back. Chiefs 17, Ravens 10. The Chiefs, man. I don't even know where you want to start with this thing, Dalton. I have a lot of thoughts. How much of this game did you get to see going into the 49ers game later in the afternoon, and just kind of what's your feeling coming out of it?
Yeah, as much as I could, the iPad on the phone on the way there and then inside the stadium at the end, but definitely missed some stuff. It was wild. 7-7 the first 10 minutes into this game, and then 10 points scored the rest of the way. Not shockingly. I mean, these teams are really strong defensively. I know there was one no call late on the Ravens, but correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like every play that could have went either way went against the Chiefs. But at least they did get the break at the goal line fumble from the week before. But Mahomes, I know everyone says this team is, or a lot of people, the narrative is he's playing with these receivers. And yes, he finished first in unrealized air yards drops, and it's horrible. But there's two sides of the ball here, and he's playing with by far his best defense of his career, and it's a big deal. I mean, same with Purdy, gets knocked because of his receivers, but Lamar and the MVP voting not for having a historically good defense and just won the first triple crown. I mean, the defense is huge here, and now we have arguably the league's best defense. I believe the Chiefs win healthy with all those guys, Bolton and everyone. They allowed the fewest yards per play this season, and they just shut down the league's MVP, Lamar, in Baltimore. So this is a really impressive defense with maybe the GOAT at quarterback. Second most playoff wins of all time. He's 28 years old or something. I mean, this is crazy. Now Andy Reid, 2 weeks to prepare. So, yeah, missing Thuny. Is it Thuny? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Joe Thuny.
Tooney. Okay, I've heard it both ways. Joe Tooney sounds like he might actually miss the Super Bowl too, but it doesn't matter. You know, go into Baltimore, Mahomes, just so impressive. And it's crazy that MVS secures the circus catch after all the drops.
And does like, afterwards.
Yeah, of course. Not as bad as C. Gardner Johnson waving the Niners when it was 20-7. He and Debo have beef dating years back. Yeah, so that was even worse.
Oh yeah, that was an all-time tough look for CJ Gardner-Johnson waving goodbye to everybody.
Yeah. I was on that side too.
He's waving goodbye to Dalton Doldon himself. Well, hello, CJ Gardner-Johnson. Dalton and the 49ers are all still here. And so are the Chiefs. The Chiefs are still here, man. And it's just crazy to me. I'm so glad that you brought up this narrative of, oh, this is the worst Pat Mahomes team you know, that's going to go. It's just different, man. And I think our brains are so wired by fantasy. And of course, I mean, this is a damn fantasy show. Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. That's the show. Like, we're wired by fantasy. We're wired by offensive players and skill positions. And yeah, the receiver position, they used to have Tyreek Hill. Now they have a mess. I mean, sort of. It's not really a mess anymore. It's just like, it was a mess for long times of this year. But, you know, Kadarius Toney's inactive and yapping on Instagram Live. He's not out here messing up games. By the way, if you haven't seen Kadarius Toney on Instagram Live, I mean, unbelievable stuff. What wild, wild player.
I don't think he's going to be in Kansas City next season. Maybe not in the league.
Dude, he might not be in the league because this is exactly how things went for him in the Giants. Yeah. And by the way, I've said this all the time with Kadarius Toney. If you think that, like, in-game mistakes, inability to stay healthy, and being a knucklehead on Instagram Live are all not intertwined, like, you don't understand real life, okay? So that's my thoughts on that. But again, the receiver position is a weakness. There's been issues at offensive tackle. But this is a great defense, bro, and you said it so perfectly because that's part of football, man. Like, yeah, you have the Terminator at quarterback, and Patrick Mahomes is going to – he's literally ruining careers. And that sounds silly when I say that, but what I mean by that is, like, at the end of Josh Allen's career and Joe Burrow's career and Lamar Jackson's career, we're going to look back and be like, oh, man, all these guys were so good. How come they didn't win more Super Bowls? Number 15 and the Kansas City Chiefs, this well-built team. That's why they didn't win more Super Bowls, because Mahomes is just that damn good. Like, he's undeniable. He's clutch. It's crazy. Did not take a sack.
Yeah, I was just gonna go there. Yeah, 100 dropbacks, right? Or 100 attempts or something. Yeah, I saw that stat of the game and I was like, wild. In the playoffs against the best opposing defenses in Baltimore, where everyone's going nuts how loud it was the week before. Insane environment. Yes, continue. Didn't take a sack in more than 100 attempts or something in the postseason. Finally did.
Yes. And same thing. Eagles last year led the NFL with sacks. 70 sacks. They had zero versus Mahomes in the Super Bowl. Ravens led the NFL with 31 takeaways this season. They led the league in sacks. No takeaways versus Mahomes yesterday. I mean, just like tough. And Baltimore was up for this game, man. The team, you could feel it, by the way, like how tense the team was. Just with all the personal fouls and all the miscues and stuff like that. I mean, Zay Flowers, again, we'll get to all that with Baltimore. Flowers. But you could tell that they were tense for this game. They thought that, and they felt it slipping away at times. The city was alive. You know, I have relatives in Baltimore. I have friends in Baltimore. Charles McDonald, our colleague, was at Baltimore, and he was saying it yesterday. Like, and Mahomes just goes in there and does it. That being said, Dalton, and like, I'm obviously giving Mahomes all the deserved praise and not being like, yeah, but this, that, or the other. Like, I do think if they win the Super Bowl this year, Dalton, we'll look back on it as the Steve Spagnuolo year. Because Spags, now at this point, the 2023 Ravens and the 2007 Patriots are both among the top five greatest teams of all time in DVOA. They both held their opponents to 17 points in that Super Bowl. And in this game, Chiefs or the Ravens held their opponents 17 points, but they lose to Spags. Like, he's the common denominator here. And he's been, this defense has been unbelievable this year. The young talent, they had free rushers coming at Pat Mahomes or coming at Lamar Jackson. Every which way, they were confusing coverages on the back end. They've been doing the stuff they've been doing all year long. So, yeah, it takes more than just having Pat Mahomes to win the Super Bowl. It takes having one of the best defensive coordinators in the NFL who's never going to get another head coaching job in Steve Spagnuolo. And it takes having Andy Reid, who, like, I don't think there's any sign that Reid is about to retire or anything. Like, he has a chance to really cement himself as maybe the best coach of all time if they continue on this dynastic pace, man. I mean, this is the type of stuff we're talking about with the Chiefs at this point.
Spags was a defense that shut down the undefeated Patriots in Super Bowl II, right?
Yes.
And and then on the other side, Rice is emerging as a viable receiver, and suddenly Travis Kelce looks healthy too. So, I mean, this team is dangerous at the right time. But yes, Spags, a fantastic job. This defense did a great job drafting the young, did just hit home runs at the draft over and over. And Chris Jones was a nightmare last time the Niners faced him in the Super Bowl. So it's remarkable. They have a great defense, and then a quarterback, which is a sack is a quarterback stat, and he's the best at avoiding those. So yeah, it's a good combination having arguably the best defense in the league and arguably the best quarterback to ever play and one of the greatest coaches. I mean, that's a pretty good combo, pretty good infrastructure to continuously go to a championship and Super Bowls year after year.
Pretty good. Yeah. Andy and I are doing an episode later in the week about things that happen in the playoffs that you should care about, that matter for fantasy next season. This Travis Kelce run, you know, if he continues to play, we're going to be talking about that, right? Because he's been so... Oh, yeah, he finished the regular season, I think, in the last three games, averaging 29 yards per game. Well, he's been on a complete heater in the playoffs, which is not so it's not so dissimilar for other seasons of Travis Kelce, actually, if you look back at it. So Chiefs, everything is going up right now. Love what Rashee Rice gave them in this game. I feel like that was my two most confident bets of this weekend were the under in this game, which I felt like an idiot to start. Like you mentioned, it looked like these two teams were going to go back and forth, and everybody I was watching the game with had bet the over. I was the only like idiot that took the under. I was like, oh man, I'm going to come out of this looking like such a moron. But that game eventually did go under. But the other one was the Rashee Rice catches. We talked about it. It was so mispriced. Plus odds you could get on Rashee Rice over 6.5 catches. And that one was, I think it was set and done in the first half because he was just so important beating that zone coverage. I can't wait to talk about him all offseason. We have plenty of time to do that. But let's talk about the Ravens here because, again, this one really, really stings. I mean, maybe stings more than the Detroit Lions loss when we're talking about like, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. They'll be back. And I don't know. What is your reaction to what I think was like, look, you can't take away how good Todd Monken and Lamar Jackson were in the regular season. Like, Lamar's going to win MVP. Todd Monken was an A-plus hire at the perfect time for this Ravens team. But I think both of those guys are going to come out of this game feeling like, man, we collectively, both of those two guys come out looking pretty bad from this game.
I guess the Ravens had three early down runs the entire game against, you know,
I think they had four true running back carries in the first half, I think. Either four or five.
Yeah. Warren Sharp's tweeting three early down runs the entire game, which is a weird strategy, you know, against the Chiefs run defense. Say Flowers, yeah, wild, you know, the penalty and then the fumble there. Yeah, disappointing season to the Ravens. The defense dominating, leading the league in takeaways, sacks, and allowing the fewest points per game. First team to ever win that triple crown, and Lamar is going to win the MVP. You get home field, you know, and then you just run into Mahomes. I mean, what more can you say? This game, no outcome would have surprised me, but Chiefs winning by double digits on the road would probably have been the most surprising, to be honest. But it shouldn't at this point with Mahomes. An impressive performance. I know people are saying which team lost it more, you know, the Lions or the Ravens, but you know, they went up against two tough teams, and I don't know what else to say other than you're disappointed like crazy if you're a Ravens fan after that season they just had. They set the record for most double-digit wins against winning opponents this year. You know, I mean, dominated the Niners in San Francisco. Jackson's going to win the MVP. Great coach, great special teams. Yeah, frustrating. I think they'll be getting contention again next year. It's Lamar's injury the last few years, you know, and it's just wild that the league didn't all try to get him as a free agent. But now with Lamar there and that another team with a good infrastructure, that they'll be contenders for you know, years to come.
Yeah, producer Colin pointed out that NFL Media did that America's Team doc spinoff called The Missing Rings, greatest teams to never win a Super Bowl. And I think like this Ravens team probably would be considered because, like I said, they're a top five team by DVOA by a ton of metrics. They're like an elite tier team.
Well, they were the highest weighted, using weighted DVOA, highest team ever at this point in the season in NFL history.
And that's right, because they smoked good teams this year. They smoked good teams. They demolished some of the best offenses in the NFL scoreboard wise. Like, they took it to the 49ers. They took it to the Lions. I mean, but they, like so many before them, they get to the end of the road and there's Pat Mahomes and there's Steve Spagnuolo and there's Andy Reid, there's the Chiefs, there's Travis Kelce, and like, just can't get over it, can't get over the hump. And I think that's why, like I said, you can't take away what Baltimore did in the regular season to evolve this offense and all of that. But it's when they do this again next year, in the regular season, just from like a true NFL perspective, it's going to feel really like hollow and like, okay, this is great, but talk to me in January. Talk to me when we get to the point. Like, can you get it? And it's not even like, oh, Lamar can't win the big one or Lamar can't win big games. And like, that's not what we're talking about here, but it's just like, can you beat Patrick Mahomes? Can you take them out of the AFC, not just the title game, because that seems like just a given, but can you go to the Super Bowl over them? That's what we're going to be talking about with this team. But sort of want to follow up our point. We talk about the Lions and some of the like projecting their ecosystem and some of the risks here. Dalton, which team like would you rather be next year? Like which offense would you rather have? Let me give you the positives here on Baltimore's side. Todd Monken had a bad game in the AFC Championship game. Can't take away from that. That was awful. Not a good performance. Not a good performance from Lamar Jackson either. I mean, can't throw that interception to Isaiah Likely. I don't care if you got bumped in the route at any point. Can't throw that ball. Like, you can't throw that. Not a good performance by those two guys. But Lamar is going to be back. Todd Monken's not getting a head coaching job. He's going to be back next year. Like, this was just year one of the Lamar Jackson, Todd Monken experience. And those guys, by all accounts, seemed to love working together. They seemed to really vibe in terms of how they saw the game. Looks like that's going to be a great marriage for years to come. Zay Flowers. Somebody tweeted me during the game, like, I compared him to Deontay Johnson in the pre-draft process for being an electric player who separates easily but kind of has some boneheaded moments. And man, did that did that comparison. Didn't really hit it too much this year, but it hit on Sunday in terms of the boneheaded play stuff. Rough sequence for him, but that guy's going to be a star. He was wide receiver 30 this year. Wherever he's going in drafts next year, I like, as long as it's within reason, consider me a buyer. I'm in on him. They can add to the receiver room that probably will move on from Odell Beckham, probably moves on from Nelson Aguilar. I think that Todd Monken can get in the lab and figure out, like, hey, how can we get Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews activated at the same time? The running game, which they neglected on Sunday, because I think, hey, you want to put the game in Lamar Jackson's hands, or do you want to put it in Gus Edwards and Justice Hill's hand? What if they have another great running back next year? Like, for all the concern I have with Detroit, I feel like there's a lot of reason to be optimistic and like excited about what Baltimore could be. So if I'm putting the question to you, Dalton, Detroit, Baltimore, which ecosystem are you more excited to invest in next year?
Before we get to that, first of all, that fumble rule, I believe, is going to get changed after these two glaring things in these final two games. And it sounds like the league is going to push for that.
Stupid.
I know you may not. Stupid to change it, you mean, right? You like it?
Yes, yeah, stupid to change it. I mean, the Zay Flowers thing is exactly why you don't change it, because that it was a stupid thing to do. Stupid. The taunting, I don't care about. Let the guys taunt. I don't care.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But, bro, like, you can't reach out on the goal line. Wasn't it, like, first or second down, too?
No, I think so.
You can't do that. Don't do it, because you fumble, and then you lose the game. If he scores, or if he goes down at the one, they score on the next couple possessions, which I know is not a lock, but that is a totally different ball game. Like, you should be punished for being foolish at the goal line. That's what happens.
Okay, secondly, I want your opinion on Lamar. He's going to have now as many MVPs as he does career playoff wins. And that was a bad interception. But at the same time, this Kansas City defense hadn't allowed a receiver to reach 90 yards in 2 months. I mean, it's so, so good. So just a tough defense, right? Lamar Ball the second half of the week before. There's no worry about him in the playoffs or anything, right?
No, I don't think so. That was a rough performance by Lamar. But like I said, they weren't able to pick up those blitzers. This is a bad matchup. Spags is a great defensive coordinator. It's a great defense. So, defense gets paid too. That would be kind of how I view this game.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have a strong feeling about which ecosystem I like more next year in fantasy between Baltimore and Detroit. The Ben Johnson, variable is definitely part of this answer here. Will Andrews and Likely split work? Who do the Ravens bring in at running back? I was all over J.K. Dobbins this year, and I was. I think it would have turned out well if he had not, torn his Achilles week one. There's upside to both. Zay Flowers can be probably drafted as high as a top 20 fantasy receiver if you wanted to. The upside's there for that. And Lamar is going to be drafted as a top 3 fantasy quarterback. So both have a big, bright future there. I mean, Gibbs, I said, is going to be taken in the second round of fantasy drafts, despite Montgomery going to be a favorite to lead the league in red zone work. As we said, I could see him because of the Ben Johnson situation here, and because like Zay Flowers going up, And, you know, maybe St. Brown, you know, maybe there's question marks there because he'll get overdrafted with the coordinator change. I mean, I guess I could see an argument for Baltimore if they draft a running back in the first round, Frank Gore Jr. in Baltimore, then suddenly that maybe that tipped the scales their way.
Yeah, I mean, look, these guys in Detroit are going to go way higher. I mean, Lamar's going to go higher
indoors, and it's yeah.
They're going to go higher in drafts, and they should. Gibbs and St. Brown should be taken in the top two rounds. Like Laporta is going to be, if he's not the first tight end, he's going to be right there in terms of tight ends off the draft board. I don't think I will actively be avoiding the Detroit Lions just because Ben Johnson's going to be gone, but I'm going to think about this risk because I didn't think about it enough with the Eagles this year. I'm going to think about this risk with them. And like I said, maybe not full on avoid them or anything like that, but I'm just going to bake that into my projections a little bit. Whereas with Baltimore, because there's coordinator stability, even though the last thing that we see with them, it's going to leave a bad taste in our mouth, I'm going to think about the ways that they can progress as a unit and all of the things that are on the table for them. We got a long offseason ahead of us, buddy, to like settle these things. But I think right now that's kind of where I'm at. But hey, Dalton, appreciate you doing this pod, man, after what had to be an absolutely wild Sunday for multiple reasons. And your Niners back in the Super Bowl against Kansas City once again.
Dude, I wasn't out of the parking lot before I lost the random drawing for a Super Bowl. You know, an allotment of season ticket holders get a chance of the Super Bowl tickets. But that's, I wasn't even literally out of the parking lot before it told me I lost that drawing. So it's like, it's laughable. It's like 10 grand or something for like the worst seat in the house right now. So it's not cheap to attend this football game. I guess Super Bowl will be the 15th straight Super Bowl where the favorite is favored by 4 points or fewer. Pretty cool, man. When I was a kid, they were blowout after blowout. So
yeah,
I know a lot of people think this the wrong team's favored here, and I expect the Chiefs to be heavily bet on in the next 2 weeks. But I know you guys will talk a lot about the Super Bowl. I'm fired up. What a game! I still can't believe they came back from that. It was crazy. And appreciate your text to me. It was a good time, man. It was crazy.
Yeah, man, I'm just glad you survived. And honestly, like, it didn't even dawn on me until halfway through the game where I was like, you know what, like, Dalton's on the podcast with me tomorrow. Oh my god, like, at least let him come back and make it competitive in the second half, not an outright embarrassment. And they did all that and more, which I know America wanted the Lions to win. They didn't want the Chiefs back in the Super Bowl, whatever. I am for no other reason than Dalton's in better shape this morning, and we got to have a great recap pod, and I'm happy for my guy Dalton. I'm glad that the 49ers pulled that thing out. So appreciate you, Dalton. Like you said, we have a ton of content coming up for the Super Bowl. Little programming note, Yahoo Fantasy Pod is going to be at the Super Bowl week, that is, all week in Las Vegas. We have great shows coming up for you early in the week. The Athletics and Yahoo's own Nate Tice joins me for a Super Bowl stat nerd preview style pod. And there's no replacing Dalton Del Don, but I think Nate's going to bring some great stuff to the table there. That's going to be next Tuesday. And yes, he's back. Austin and his eyebrows for now are going to join me in Vegas for the season finale of Eckler's Edge next Thursday. We're going to have a ton of other great interviews, content in general. Going to be some big time NFL superstars coming through this week with Yahoo. You do not want to miss it. You can follow all that if you just follow me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB and Yahoo Sports, Yahoo Fantasy on all the socials. Shout out to Dalton. That's going to do it for us today. Andy Behrens is going to join me on Thursday to put a bow on the postseason so far. Like I said, some lessons we can take away from January football that we don't account, but we should account for in our 2024 fantasy projections. Secret list style, of course. And also, we're going to have some special guests. One of the best wide receiver duos in the league is going to sit down with me for an interview. You'll have to wait and see which duo I'm talking about. Until then, we're out.